You're listening to Madiba's Radio.
Opula pule Madiba's Radio.
Utelerije Madiba's Radio.
Oteche deza Madiba Radio.
Omametse Madiba's Radio.
Akalise na Madiba's Radio.
Lalele I Madiba's Radio.
Ulalele Madiba's Radio.
Niko chechereza Madiba's Radio.
Ureje Madiba's Radio.
You're listening to Madiba's Radio, opening up the way for you to be heard.
Hello and welcome to The Law Show. Right here on Madiba's Radio, we connect, inform, and engage. My name is Katlego Mofokeng. I'm also known as Girl with the Nice Pants on the Instagram streets. The pants in question today are a little beige. We're feeling a little risque. Obwana, it was raining earlier this morning and it cleared up, but we said we operate. The drip is forever. We live for the mpatlas. But today we are talking about Ubuntu in action, particularly in action on Nelson Mandela Day. Now, we are Tata's children because we're named after him. So we have the privilege of being able to have a conversation about what Ubuntu looks like in action, whether or not we practice it any day outside of Mandela Day. And you know what? The student population at NMU is doing the things, actually. No one does it like us. I'd love to say it that way. No one really does it like us. And we display excellence in so many ways, but Ubuntu in so many life altering and interesting and very, very diverse ways. We have students who go out of their way in the personal capacity to feed the homeless. We have pad drives and food drives to assist students. We have people who go out to high schools and help these young people apply for university and open up their horizons. We go for talks and workshops on how best to do better in your life. We have colloquiums where our lecturers are trying to find better ways to engage with the students in their classes. We have just so many things that make us this dynamic front. And I live and die for NMU right now because of the fact that Bona, our basketball team, a lot of our athletics teams also did the best things ever at the USAs. So I'm feeling very, very, very much like Nelly M's child. Hey, we are Tata's children for real, for real. But we have to talk about Nelson Mandela Day, obviously, and understanding when it happened, when it started, why it is that we have Nelson Mandela Day, and the different ways that I've noticed that students on campus practice Ubuntu in action. Now, Nelson Mandela Day was first declared by the United Nations. Now, Nelson Mandela Day was first declared by United Nations in 2009, with the first UN Mandela Day being held in 2010. So we're like 15 years in the game. We've been doing it for a minute. And I mean, Mandela Day was meant to be a day that honors the legacy of Nelson Mandela through volunteering and community service. And it has been just that. We have seen the 67 Blankets campaigns where blankets are given to those who are less fortunate. And we have seen food drives and soup kitchens pop up, especially on said day. But we are also a nation of people who understand that these problems that we're trying to help solve by volunteering and taking part in community service are not just one day issues. Homeless people don't just appear on the 18th of July. People don't just need food on said day. This is their life. And the beauty of Nelson Mandela University, I have found, is in its students. The gems that reside within the walls of NMU. We have various members from political organizations. We have different people from even sporting organizations that will be letting us know what Ubuntu looks like, what winning looks like, what it feels like to take part in community, to build community, and also to make sure that the community around us is actually okay. And one of the ways in which we have seen community has been in student protests. And I'm not just talking protests that we often see at the beginning of the year, but protests that we've seen for justice so that accountability can be taken for people who exploit and hurt members of this university, members of this community, of this province, of this entire country. We've seen from Justice for Gqeqwe marches. We have seen it from the protests that happened outside the magistrate's court for the person who killed young students after the Freshers' Party at the beginning of this year. We've seen it for the student who was unfortunately killed by a shop owner off campus. We've seen different ways in which people go about trying to help and better their communities. And we need to take cognizance of that. We need to be grateful for it because we are better for it, for being in communities where people see that people are being exploited or marginalized and they speak out and advocate for said people. They rally around them and take care of them. For a university populace that actually understands the fact that funding issues stretch far beyond accommodation and tuition and into groceries and toiletries and different facets of your life. We understand that it's important for people to feel supported in order for them to actually take their mental health seriously, so much so that we have different offices all over the university that do just that. Now, we can look at the different ways in which, you know, the university is going off ramp, but we can also acknowledge the good that is happening on campus. We can acknowledge the fact that we really are embodying Ubuntu in action. We are seeing it with, I saw it in exam season. Exam season was insane. I mean, I saw it, yes, in the protests at the beginning of the year about funding, about concessions and the like, and safety concerns for all of students. Absolutely. That is Ubuntu in action. But for me, Ubuntu in action was very interesting around exam season. Now, gearing up to exam season, there were people just like showing up at the library and giving out little goodies and studying alongside other students. And that was such an interesting way for us not just to assist students in you know, at least at the very least having something in their stomach while they're studying so that, you know, you don't get dizzy from the information and the hunger. Just no, not none of that. They made sure that people were fed, that they were okay. And not only that, but they spent time with these people. They sat down with them, understood who they were, tried to explore different areas of conversation with these people. And that's something so beautiful because we're building community and doing just that. In speaking to people, acknowledging their existence, seeing them, hearing them. And it was really, really quite a sight to behold. I've attended talks that have detailed Fees Must Fall, the Fees Must Fall movement in quite explicit detail. And even in those rooms, you can feel the Ubuntu in action because it's the co-creation of knowledge. It's the exchange of knowledge, of understanding and ideologies. It's been, honestly, like I said, a sight to behold when people rally around one another, because ultimately you understand, I am because you are. By virtue of me being enriched with this wealth of knowledge, you too are going to be wealthy because I am here to impart said knowledge to you. I am here to embody the spirit of oneness, of community. And it's nothing short of amazing to see that happening with young people. I've spoken at length about advocating for young people practicing their agency. And I've seen it happen. And it's kind of scary, but it's also something really beautiful. Really, really, really beautiful to see because it gives you hope. First, that we are not going to break down as a society into individualism. And by that I mean, with the older generation, banale di stokvela, di society, di society tsa kroza, and the like. And I mean, young people don't really, you know, engage in those kind of things anymore. And so oftentimes we're losing recipes. And now we're realizing actually we're cooking. We might just be creating our own recipes. Our own recipes just show that we are here. We still care about one another. We still care about creating community. We still care about making sure that everybody around us is okay. But we're doing it in different ways, and that's okay. The fact that community manifests in different ways speaks to the culture of the time. And the culture of the time with elders necessitated bodhisattva, leader society, and the like. And maybe we're not at an age yet to embody that and to take part in it. But our culture right now is of making sure that we are at university. We are all in the same class, receiving the same body of information, of knowledge. And yes, we may be equal in that setting, but some of us have to go home ka taxi, and that alone costs money. And even then, after that, that long travel to home means also taking care of household chores and then being a university student and then taking part in social life and various other aspects of life. So we understand that, yes, we're equal in a classroom. We're all getting the same amount of information. We're all getting all of this knowledge shared and created among us, but we're not really equal. And in order for us to make sure that we all succeed in this thing called university life, we need to make sure that those who are not okay are okay. So it means understanding that there are students in your class that do not have accommodation, that do not have food or toiletries, and understanding that, you know what, in order for them to succeed the same way I am succeeding from my level of privilege, I need to be a part of the revolution. That includes taking part in pad drives, in food drives, donating where and when you can, donating of just not just your money, but your time too. And I think that's why Mandela Day is important, is that we invest our time. 67 minutes is a pretty long time. It's an hour, you know, of working to help someone else, working to better whatever community you're working in. That's important. So donating your time, making use of that time to help somebody else, to connect with somebody else, to build community with somebody else. That is what it's all about. And I've witnessed it in the likes of Uasive, who is an amazing young woman who feeds the bay one meal at a time, feeding the needy in the bay. And seeing the work that she does consistently scared me, because I thought to myself, wow, I don't think I'm doing enough. And it also, I think, radicalized me in a way in understanding the fact that when I first arrived at PE, the homelessness issue was something very interesting to behold. I'm from Joburg, so homelessness is something that I'm very familiar with, yes. But the way in which the homeless are treated around here was a bit different, you know. And I had a bit of a culture shock, obviously, moving to here and all that, but it's so interesting to see somebody use it in their personal capacity, using the funds that they have, the remainder of the funds that they have for the month, and cooking up a meal and taking care of those people who are homeless, because they understand the gravity of what it is these people are dealing with. Because these people don't just weather the actual storms and the weather itself, but there are so many other contributing factors to where they are, and helping them just with a meal changes so much. So shout out to her for inspiring me to do better in my community, first of all, but also for giving me hope that young people truly, truly, truly are the bearers of this new vibe of liberation. We really are starting on a beautiful foot. And that's why the campus is what it is. That's why we have intergenerational dialogues where we can impart knowledge to the old heads and they can also drop some gems here and there because of the fact that we've taught each other that, yes, we need one another, not just for knowledge exchange, but to help one another. And we also we don't just exchange this vertically, but horizontally too, amongst ourselves, within the groups that we are in. We make sure that we take care of the people around us so that they can take care of people around them. And it's a domino effect of good vibes, good karma, and ubuntu, the sense of communal spirit, community. So I think it's very important then for us to hear from the people who are making sure that they practice ubuntu in action, the ways in which they go about doing that, and what it means to them for them to actually partake in community building. And we are about to hear from them right now.
Oh, yes, I like
it. Deepest Radio.
Izwi to Africa. My name is Sinethemba Gaje, and I am the current chairperson of IBASMA. I would like to say thank you so much for your helpful message. It truly means a lot to us as IBASMA members. We are deeply encouraged by your recognition of our effort and also visibility of our work so far this year. All I can say is kuningi okuzayo. Our members are passionate about fostering positive change, whether through institutional dialogue or practical support like meal prep initiative during these difficult times for students of Nelson Mandela University. The communal spirit of Ubuntu you've highlighted, it is at the core of what we strive to uphold. We firmly believe that solidarity and collective action are vital in addressing systematic challenges and ensuring no student struggle goes unheard. Izwi to.
Greetings to you all. My name is Asifemia Taza, a third-year Human Resources Management student and currently the Academics Transformation and Gender Officer of the SRC. What is Ubuntu and what does Ubuntu mean to Asif? Ubuntu is about recognizing that our individual well-being is tied to the well-being of those around us. In my work, I strive to embody Ubuntu by prioritizing empathy, compassion, and community-driven initiatives. I believe that by working together and supporting one another, we can create positive change and foster a sense of belonging. In what ways do I carry Ubuntu in my work and the work that I do for the community? Well, to answer that question, my friends and I last year, October, decided to start an initiative called Feeding the Bay. Feeding the Bay is basically a group of students who cater for those in need. We focus on the Summerston area because that's where we live. So we feed the need one meal at a time. We try doing this on a monthly basis from the extra change that we have from our Nest West bursary. So we go buy food, then we cook it at rest, and then we go serve it to the homeless people around Summerston so that at least they go to bed with food in their stomach. And that is how I give back to my community and how I carry Ubuntu in a community-based program. Thank you.
Within the context of student activism, particularly within the EFF, the EFFYC, Ubuntu is not just a philosophy that we speak about. It is a principle we actively live out. Every program that we champion is rooted in the betterment of the students at Nelson Mandela University, because the students' community is a society in which we function within. The EFFYC has consistently rejected systematic oppression, the kind that will see many of our students left without accommodation, food, or access to education. We believe that access to accommodation, nutrition, and learning is not a privilege, but a basic human right. When these are denied, it is a violation of Ubuntu. Our pursuit of free decolonized education is a reflection of this value. From the beginning of the academic year, the EFFYC has worked tirelessly to ensure that the students could register despite the depressions caused by the NSFAS instabilities and exclusionary university admission policies. We have rolled out numerous interventions to make the living and learning environment more conducive for our students, including a walkabout program in the student residences to address safety, cleanliness, technical faults, and Wi-Fi access. Many of these issues are currently being fixed. We have hosted a study marathon where we offered snacks, coffee, and daily meals to support our peers, because Ubuntu in action means showing care for one another. Looking ahead, the EFFYC is preparing to launch a sanitary campaign in which we aim to ensure that no female student goes without dignified menstrual support. Menstruation is not a choice, but access to sanitary products should not be a barrier to dignity or education. So in all that we do, we are guided by the spirit of Ubuntu, because true liberation is collective, and no one is free until we are all free.
Oh yes, I like
Radio. That being said, we are nearing the very end of the law show. But before then, I have a gig guide. Isn't that interesting? Katlego Mofokeng has a gig guide. Very interesting. But basically, later tonight, I will be at a community dialogue at the South End Museum. We will be talking about land reconciliation and expropriation, and we will be doing it under the umbrella of Frantz Fanon. It was his centenary this past weekend, so we decided, you know what, why not celebrate it in a big way and use his teachings to kind of unpack land and expropriation and the TRC and whether or not it has succeeded or really failed the people it sought to help in the first place. It's a very, very deep conversation and has a bunch of layers to it. But the most important thing, the way it applies to the law show, is the fact that we spoke about the expropriation bill last week. And what that is basically land reform in legislation. And it has been something that was envisaged at the very beginning of the democratic process. And it is something that we are seeing happen live jive right now. But more often than not, we are focusing on the reactions of people to the legislation and not the legislation itself and what it entails. It's been very important then to unpack it, unpack the bill itself, what it means, what it is, how it seeks to help previously disadvantaged South Africans, and kind of bring them back up. Remember the classroom analogy? We are all sitting there receiving the same type of information, but none of us outside of the walls of said classroom are equal. We all have personal struggles that we are dealing with. And the only way to get about that is to make sure that everybody is taken care of. We can take care of ourselves, but also the government can make measures that will assist in you helping yourself and succeeding as a human being. So that is me. On the 22nd of July, I will basically be facilitating a community dialogue at the South End Museum. And then afterwards, on Thursday, the girl is a speaker on student protests in Southern Africa. We'll be talking all things, obviously, 10 years since fees must fall, naturally. But we'll also be talking about the different ways in which students protest. I think people don't understand the fact that back in the day, there were stay-away strikes. There were actual protests, you know, with the burning of the tires and ukulikwijo and holding up signs, all that. But there are different types of protests. There are different types of ways in which you can show that you are disgruntled. You are not happy with the status quo. There are different ways to disrupt said status quo. But it's in understanding the status quo, understanding the complexities of said quo, and unraveling them, and then seeking to stage your own disruption. Those are important things. So the girl will be talking quite a lot this entire week. But more than anything, I want to encourage the listeners. It is very important that you show up as yourself in every room that you walk into. That in and of itself is its own very... That in and of itself is its very own revolution. Understand that. When you do the things, your purpose is great. Your purpose is understanding the thing that you have to do. But what lies in your purpose is how you make people feel when you do what it is that you do. And I hope I'm making complete sense. Otherwise, reach out to us on Madiba's Radio on all social media platforms. And don't forget, we are Madiba's Radio. We connect, inform, and absolutely engage. And if you want to engage with me, I am Katlego Mofokeng, and I'm also girl with a nice pants on the Instagram street. So reach out to me on Instagram if ever you want to have a conversation, unpack some things, attack me. It's okay. I can take it. But please don't. Please. We're just saying this for the sake of saying it, but please don't attack me, because, yeah. I will be talking to you next week, but I will also give you a glimpse into what the week looks like and what it means to be, hey, a presenter here at Nelson Mandela University and Madiba's Radio, and what it also means to co-create not just knowledge and indigenous knowledge systems, but also community. What community means to me. Remember, Ubuntu in action is literally you in action, because you are the embodiment of a communal spirit that is never ending, undying, and very consistent. From me, Katlego Mofokeng, this is it. Bye.
The best youth station in the Bay. Madiba's Radio.
And of course, it is that time again. Welcome to Science Package here on Madiba's Radio Podcast. Because as you always say, we connect, inform, and engage. And of course, to introduce myself, my name is Gcilo Kethelo Ndlovu, the brightest star on radio. Once you know that Gcilo is on your airwaves, nothing will ever be the same. And listen, we've got some juicy tea to cover this today, actually. Because the first topic, we're firstly going to cover the connection between ships and methane gas. Now, you wouldn't think that methane gas and shipping has a connection, but turns out they do. And then, of course, after that, we'll be discussing the successful year that the Cape Town cruise terminal has had. Because listen, one thing about the ports of South Africa, they stay slaying, they stay doing what needs to be done. And of course, once again, on Science Package, listen, a lot of these companies always be in some sort of scandal, and this time it is Eskom. Because hey, you know Eskom, we all know Eskom when it comes to load shedding and our electricity in our country. But we're gonna get into that a bit later. And then lastly, once again, we always have our science fun facts, because we love learning. We love to learn different things across STEM, because STEM is so amazing. But let's get into it. The connection between ships and methane gas. Now, what is going on exactly? Now, scientists have actually discovered that ships traveling in shallow waters can trigger methane gas to bubble up from the seafloor, no matter what fuel is used. Now, when a ship passes, it creates pressure changes and turbulence in the water, which pushes methane gas out of the sediment into the air. Now, I found this shocking, because when I think of methane gas, I usually think about cows, and you know, when cows fart, they just like, you know, release some methane gas. So I was like, oh, so ships do the same thing? Is it fair to say that ships are also farting? I mean, they're not farting per se, but they are releasing the same gas as cows release. So it's quite interesting, because also when a ship passes, it creates that pressure change and then it releases these, basically, we're just going to name it methane farts. But how did they find this out? Now, while they were researching the Baltic Sea, in Neva Bay specifically, scientists accidentally stumbled upon unexpected methane plumes nearby busy shipping lanes. Now, using methane sensors, they retract the gas release, and it wasn't the ship's fuel causing it. It was the physical effect of the ship moving through water, because, hey, you know, ships are very big. Now, methane leaks in shipping lanes were found to be 20 times greater than in undisturbed areas. So listen, once a ship docks into whatever port, whether it be a port here in Africa, here in North, South America, or Asia, best believe it's going to release some methane. And that methane is going to cause a lot of impact. Now, cargo ships and cruise liners cause the biggest spikes, but all types of ships, big or small, have an effect. So whether it be a ship as big as the Titanic, or it could even be like, you know, what do you call a small ship? Now I even forgot what you call a small ship. Is it it's not a jet. It's a, whatchamacallit, those things that you ride, like, you know, when you're on a holiday and like people, jet ski. I think it's a jet ski, but probably they also release some methane gas as well. So whether it's a jet ski or a huge ship that has cargo or even a cruise ship, they'll be releasing some methane gas. And that's especially important because many of the world's largest ports are in shallow coastal waters like Neva Bay. Now, why does this actually matter? Because methane is a powerful greenhouse gas, around 27 times more potent than carbon dioxide. It's strong. It is very strong. So we really have to monitor how much methane is being released into our environment, because we can't be having it being released on an uncontrollable level and it causing damage to our ozone layer and just the overall world. Now, since 90% of global trade moves by ship and most of these ports are in shallow areas, these hidden emissions could be a major blind spot in climate science. Researchers say we need to study more shipping lanes worldwide, like in Singapore, South Korea, Rotterdam, including the ones we have here in South Africa, the ports of Cape Town, the ports of Port Elizabeth, the ports of Durban, the ports of Richards Bay. We've got a lot of ports here in South Africa. Now, what can we take away from this? Now that we know that, listen, these ships are releasing some methane gas and they're releasing it at uncontrollable levels, what can we learn? We need to further these studies about why they're releasing these gases and how they're releasing these gases, because at the end of the day, methane has such an impact on our environment, because we are always trying to see how can we save the ozone layer, how can we save our climate from going from in a tricky area to worse, and we don't want our climate to get worse. Hence why these studies are ultimately so important, because we, at the end of the day, we want a world to live in generations to come, hundreds, thousands. Listen, like, by the time 1 million years passes from 2025, the world must still be alive. It must still be alive. And we hope that it is, even though I don't know if any of us will be there. Because although we're young, at the end of the day, 1 million years is a lot of time to live. But speaking of ships, actually, we're going to get into Cape Town's cruise terminal. Because listen, Cape Town has had a successful cruise season. Now, in the 2024-2025 cruise season that ended in June 2025 was a record-breaking year with 83 cruise ship calls. 83 is a lot, including 11 first-time visits. Oh, okay. I love that, to see that not only, because although you could just say, but it's happening in Cape Town, how does it affect the country? Listen, everybody and their mama is going to go to Cape Town for a cruise, and to consider that 11 ships that have never docked in South Africa have docked in our country is insane. And it just shows that our country, tourism-wise, is really growing. Now, March 2025 alone saw 22 ship visits, the highest monthly total ever. 22 is a lot, considering how, when you think about it, when I think about cruises, I think, it's just once in a blue moon, maybe one or two a month. So 22 is actually an insane amount. Now, let's get into the maths of it. Passenger and crew traffic grew by approximately 16% year over year. 16% is a lot. I feel like when you put it in perspective, let's just say, you know, it's academic season and you're saying to yourself, I want to grow my DP or your mark by 16%. So if you started at 40, let's just say you started at 40%. I hope you're not starting 40%, but hey, things happen. And then you move from 40 to 56. Not only have you passed, but you're safe. You're in the clear zone. You don't have to stress about your DP. Now, this boom reflects Cape Town's rising popularity as a key global cruise destination. As I said, everybody want to go to Cape Town. I mean, who wouldn't? I also want to go to Cape Town. And to see that not only Cape Town in itself is growing as a tourist destination, South Africa is growing as a tourist destination. Everybody want to go on a cruise. So, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe this December, I might just hop on a cruise, because it does seem like such an adventurous thing to do. Now, this also has an economic impact, because at the end of the day, we always like to talk about the money. Now, according to Westgro, cruise tourism generated around 1.3 billion rand in regional economic value during the 2023-2024 season. 1.3 billion is a lot. That's a lot of money. Total expenditure from vessels, passengers, and crew reached around 1.5 billion, supporting nearly 2,000 jobs across tourism, hospitality, retail, and transport sectors. So it's really interesting to see it's not just one sector that's really being impacted. All the sectors that goes into cruise shipping is being impacted, as we said, transport, hospitality, retail. You know, it's just a lot. And it's amazing to see that it's the job creation that is creating, like, because we know, hey, unemployment can be very rife in this country. So the more jobs, the better. The more industries that open and the more industries that continuously grow, the better we as South Africans can really just enjoy our lives and to see our country grow more and more. Now, the world-class Cape Town Cruise Terminal is at the V&A Waterfront. It is central to the success because if you haven't seen V&A Waterfront, that place is amazing. It's bougie, it's nice, it's just be... I know you can do a lot of shopping there. I've never been, but I know there's a lot of shopping, there's a lot of entertainment. So it's quite a touristic... Is that the word touristic? But we're going to say it's a word touristically... whatever it is, tourism spot, let's just say. It's a tourism hot spot. So the fact that not only do you have this entertainment sector right next to a cruise terminal that's doing so well, just the combination is just putting Cape Town on the map. Because recently, Cape Town was actually named Africa's leading cruise port at the 2025 World Travel Awards. Its third straight win and fourth overall. So listen, Cape Town Cruise Terminal is standing on business. Three wins in a row. Now we going places. We are going places. Now, as Cape Town drives towards the goal of doubling tourism by 2035, cruise tourism is playing a key role attracting new liners, inaugural calls, and boosting long-term partnerships. Officials also emphasize strong collaboration between government and private stakeholders to sustain this growth and momentum, because listen, it's clear that the cruise industry in Cape Town and as Africa as a whole is doing so well. One thing about maritime, it's going to be always on the up, 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 which also makes me ask the question, so when it comes to like people who are studying on ocean science, because I'm assured that like, okay, it also affects them when it comes to maritime talks and just anything about maritime. It's just like, we go in places. Like ocean science is a good campus, I will say. Ocean science is a beautiful campus, so interesting, and just so interesting to actually explore South African waters, not only from a ship perspective, but also what's going inside. Like, what's inside our waters? Are our waters being protected? Are our waters basically like fresh, or they're not the way they should? I mean, considering how, hey, as we discussed before with the whole ships and methane gas, hopefully the ships that are docking at the port of Cape Town are not doing too much damage. But you know, as we discussed earlier, hey, it's a cause for concern. Methane is being released while these cruise ships are being docked, but that is an issue that we will have to explore as time goes on, because listen, more ships are coming in, more methane gas is coming in. We love the tourism, we love the business, we love the momentum, but as we always say, what does this do for the climate? Are we growing as a world, or are we just going further into climate problems? And we don't want that. We don't want that. And of course, it is time to speak about, I wouldn't say our local friend, but I would call them our local friend, Eskom. Now, you know Eskom. Eskom stays in issues. Well, I wouldn't say they stay in issues, but there's a lot going on with Eskom because recently they are ordered to pay French company over 1 billion rand. You heard me, 1 billion rand. But let's get into the tea. What exactly is going on? Now, the Western Cape High Court ruled that Eskom must pay Framatome, which is formerly Areva, a French nuclear engineering firm, almost 1 billion rand in compensation for a long-standing contract dispute related to replacement of steam generators at the Coburg nuclear power plant in Cape Town. Now, if you haven't heard about Coburg, Coburg is South Africa's only nuclear power plant, and it also assists with, you know, generating electricity for the country. And as years have gone by, the city of Cape Town, as well as South Africa as a whole, has been investing more into Coburg as an alternative to coal mining, as well as coal production for electricity. So, you know, we're trying to get into the nuclear zone, but now we're being sued. So what's going on? What's going on? Now, this contract dates back to 2014, under which Framatome was hired to supply and install two sets of three replacement steam generators during scheduled outages for units 1 and 2. Apparently, Eskom repeatedly postponed the outages, most critically refusing to proceed with Unit 2 work as initially planned. Framatome invoked its rights to claim compensation for the cost of delays according to contract clauses. So Framatome was like, what's going on, Eskom? We want our money and we want it now. Now, the acting judge, Renata Williams, confirmed that the adjudicator's decision from compensation amounts to jurisdiction were valid and binding under the contract. So Eskom gotta pay. Eskom gotta pay that money and pay it fast, because if they don't, it's gonna cause a lot more problems for South Africa when it comes to our energy and how we create energy, how we have electricity, and will it be sustainable as years go by. Now, Eskom's challenge to overturn the adjudicator's quantum and processes on the grounds of jurisdiction and fairness was dismissed, and Eskom's declaratory application was rejected with costs awarded to Framatome. So Eskom was just like, listen, they tried to challenge it, but Framatome was like, nah, we're in the right. You gotta pay us back because we gave you these steam generators and now you're not doing what you need to do. So where's the money? Where is the money? Now, the exact payment in euros, it's 35 million euros, and which calculates to about 729 million, excluding VAT, plus inflation, plus interest based on the contract's secondary option clause. Where is Eskom going to get this money? Because not only that, they're also going to have to pay an additional cost of 256.6 million rand, excluding VAT as well, plus inflation, plus interest. This is a lot of money that Eskom needs to put up, because if you do the math, 725 million plus 256 million, that's just touching 1 billion, if my math is correct. You know, hey, but listen, 1 billion to cough off from Eskom, it's a lot of money, because yes, maybe Eskom does have the money, but the question is, if they don't have this money, what impact will this have on South Africa? Because when we look at it from a broader perspective, this dispute is one amongst many more, amongst a lot of the contractual disputes Eskom is facing over the Coburg steam generators, as well as a lot of the processes that are occurring at Eskom across all of their plants in South Africa. As Eskom has previously been penalized 950 million rand for delays in Unit 1 maintenance, and earlier awarded 208 million in a separating ruling for compensation event breaches. Hey, Eskom, what's going on? Like, what's going on with the finances? Like, not only are we having electricity problems, now when it comes to the financial aspect of things, it's looking tricky, it's looking tricky. Now, this maintenance delay threatens Eskom's plan to extend Coburg's lifespan by 20 years, as delays have pushed replacement timelines close to licensing expirement in mid-2024. So, with all these delays, once again, at the end of the day, what does this say about Eskom as a business? What is going to happen in the future? They say, listen, Coburg by 2035 is going to be up operational than it's ever been before. But now, it's looking tricky. Can Coburg really, like, can it really work at its capacity considering all these legal delays? We don't know. Because the critics have also raised a lot of concerns about mismanagement, delays, potential corruption in handling the project, warning that power supply, reliability, and public finances are under strain. Now, what does this communicate? Because at the end of the day, Eskom has to pay nearly 1 billion to Framatome for all of these delays and all of these postponements of the projects for their units. This is going to impact South Africa because this case highlights contractual accountability on Eskom as well as what the energy is going to look like in the future. Are we going to have electricity? Because failure to complete these steam generator replacements before the plant's license expiry could threaten South Africa's energy security and worsen load shedding in the coming winters. Oof. Hey, load shedding. Because Kuiperk originally was put in place to alleviate load shedding. But now that Kuiperk is facing issues, load shedding might be looming, and we don't want to hear that. We do not want to hear that, because once load shedding starts, not only does it affect us and our livelihoods as just, you know, average people, but it also affects a lot of businesses in all industries, science, business, retail, entertainment. Load shedding really does a lot to this country, economically wise. Hey, it's a lot. But to lighten up the mood, because we hope that Eskom can get its stuff together and we don't have to deal with any more load shedding. But if we have to, it is what it is, I guess. But on to our science facts, because listen, we always like to learn different things. Now, our first science fact for the day is giraffes are 30 times more likely to get hit by lightning than people. Giraffes are more likely to get hit by lightning, which I would say is quite, okay, not, I wouldn't say satisfying, because I don't wish any animal or anything to be struck by lightning, because I don't think it's a nice thing to happen, because that could be very shocking. I love the pun. But because, not only because of their height, because also considering how they are located in very vast areas when it comes to like the nature, when it's like more so in what you call it, Kruger National Park and nature reserves, when you see giraffes, they just like the only, not to say they're the only animals there, but they're the tallest ones there. When you see a giraffe in the middle of a felt, it's like the tallest thing, and it's the thing you notice first. So if you were lightning, of course you would strike it. Not to say the giraffe should get struck by lightning. No giraffe should get struck by lightning, but they are more likely to get struck by lightning. There are only 5 well-documented fatal lightning strikes on giraffes between 1996 and 2010. So that's a lot of years, and there's only been 5, RIP to those giraffes. So hopefully that number doesn't increase. But due to the population of the species being just 1,400 during this time, it makes for about 0.003 lightning deaths per 1,000 giraffes each year. So this is 30 times the equivalent fatality rate of humans. So although it's slightly higher for giraffes than humans, I hope giraffes don't get struck by lightning. Like, we pray that nobody gets struck by lightning, because I would assume it's traumatic, even if you somehow survive that. Hey, this, yeah. But secondly, identical twins don't have the same fingerprint. Now, when you think identical twins, you think that all their DNA is the same, and you would assume that when it comes to fingerprint, it would also be the same. But nope, it is not the same. So for all my twins out there, if you think you could do a crime and you could just blame it on your twin, that's not going to happen. I mean, I'm a twin myself, but I wouldn't say unfortunately, but we are not identical. We are fraternal because we're different genders. So either way, it wouldn't apply to us. But even if you were identical, unfortunately, those fingerprints are not the same. This is due because of environmental factors in the development of the womb. It goes to the umbilical cord, the position of the womb, the length, and the rate of finger growth. It differs depending on the fetus, depending on the baby. So the fingerprint is not going to be the same, because at the end of the day, in as much as people may think that, oh, identical twins are the same, they look the same, sometimes they act the same, sometimes people go as far as saying they're the same person, which they are not. They are two different individuals, and you should respect that. Their fingerprints are not the same, and it just goes to show, I would say, their difference in identity as people. And of course, lastly, Earth's rotation is changing speed. This is a shocking one, to be honest. I was shocked by this because we always thought that Earth's speed is constant. It never changes. When it spins at the same speed from when it began to when it's going to end. Well, is the world going to end? That's a whole topic. That's a whole nother topic. But at the end of the day, Earth's rotation is changing speeds. It's actually slowing down. It's slowing down. So if you feel like the days are getting a bit slower, maybe that's why. Which personally, I always thought the days are getting faster. Like life is moving more faster. Like the days are just rolling and rolling and rolling. I feel like 2 minutes from now, it's probably going to be 2056. That's how much time is really moving. So to consider that Earth is actually slowing down, it's crazy. It's quite crazy. Because this means that on average, the length of a day increases around by 1.8 seconds per century. 600 million years ago, a day only lasted just about 21 hours. So what's going to happen as time moves? And what environmental impacts is this going to have? Because I remember watching like this YouTube video of how, or was it a TikTok? It was a TikTok actually, where I was like, if you change the Earth's speed by like, let's just say, Earth's days are like 12 hours instead of 24 hours. I saw that the whole makeup of Earth changes. Like even the oceans, they kind of go closer towards the poles rather than the equator. And just the equator is much more drier. And certain areas like the Northern Hemisphere, like North America gets more colder. Southern Hemisphere also gets more colder. The equator gets even more hot. It just changes everything climatically. So to think that, although yes, it is at a slow rate, the fact that the Earth is getting slower and slower and slower, what impact is this going to have? And are we going to feel this impact in our lifetimes? Because hey, at the end of the day, it is moving at a very slow rate. So by the time that maybe the minor impacts could be felt, will we still be alive? That's the question. That's really the question we have to ask. But of course, we've learned so much today. We've spoken about a lot, actually. Like, we learned that ships, they fart methane, just like cows. I was shocked too, but once they're in those shipping lanes, they're going to excrete some gases. And listen, it may be cool to think about that, oh, ships, you know, they also excrete like us and the cows. What impact does this have on our environments? Because methane is a very powerful gas, and that ozone child, that ozone needs to be protected. And then, of course, we spoke about Cape Town's successful cruise terminal. Cape Town cruise terminal is glowing up. They're doing what needs to be done. The maritime industry, the tourism industry, the hospitality industry, the transportation industry is just booming. And although yes, the ships may be excreting methane, at least it's doing something for the economy. You could debate that, but as we said, you know, unemployment is rife, so the fact that more jobs are being created, more opportunities are being shown, it's amazing. It is amazing. And we'll deal with the methane problem. Listen, we got a lot of scientists in South Africa. We've got a lot of experts who know how to solve the issues. And I trust us as students as well, for all my faculty of science people. If you're listening, shout out to you. You have the answers. Even if you don't have it right now as a first year or honors or postgrad, whatever you are, I'm looking for you for the answers. Because listen, as much as the ships are coming into Cape Town and all the ports, if they're excreting methane gas, what must happen? What must happen? And lastly, we spoke about Eskom being sued. There's always somebody being sued, hey? Like, there's always somebody being sued. Because even in the previous episode, Total Energies was being sued. So one thing about the science industry, somebody is being sued. But if you are conducting malpractice, it kind of makes sense that you're being sued. Because listen, we want all the businesses in the STEM industry to do what needs to be done ethically. So if you're not doing things properly, then you're going to get sued, unfortunately. And that's what it is. But with Eskom, as we talked about, they're getting sued because Coburg is having issues. And if Coburg is having issues, load shedding might be on the horizon, and I don't know how to feel about that. And yeah, you know, load shedding. But But we will deal with that problem when we get there. But thank you so much for tuning into Science Package. Once again, Madiba's Radio, where we connect, inform, and engage. So always engage with us, because we love engaging with you. We love learning about you, and we love sharing knowledge, because that is what we are prioritized. But once again, same time, same place next week. Bye.
Opening up the waves for you to be heard.